Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. This is a Saturday special. Now we'll return to the topic of how to protect yourself from coronavirus, including for this edition, how to protect yourself in the delivery economy, workers and customers alike, also protecting workers and customers when people still do go out shopping. And we'll talk about more, too. My guest is Dr. Stephen Morse, epidemiology professor at the Columbia University Medical Center and director of their Infectious Disease Epidemiology Certificate Program. Dr. Morse, thanks so much for coming on WNYC with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Dr. Morse, I saw you quoted in an article on Slate on the question of which is safer for customers right now, shopping in person or taking deliveries. Is the answer clear cut?
I think in general it's safer to take delivery simply because if you go out to the supermarket, you're coming in contact with a lot of people. And most of the transmission of this virus is really person to person. It's through the respiratory route. And so it is safer to have a delivery. On the other hand, think about the employees. We take them for granted, but they're very much a part of our essential economy today. And they're really on the front lines.
Many deliveries come in cardboard boxes. How well and how long does the virus live on cardboard?
Well, theoretically, there are some studies that show that the virus can live for hours or perhaps a day on cardboard. But realistically, it's not that easy, probably, to get infected by the virus that way. The evidence seems to indicate that the primary means of infection is really by the respiratory route. So if you get a delivery, be very careful about people you're in contact with, people you may be breathing on or may be breathing on you. When you get a delivery, of course, people usually will wash their hands after they've opened the box and then very carefully take out whatever is inside. They'll wipe down the surface. But that's a precaution. And in most cases, we think that that's a good precaution, but it's probably not that common for people to get infected that way. On the other hand, it's very important, as we always say, you know, don't touch your face, don't touch your eyes, your nose, your mouth, unless your hands are clean. That's the number one thing. So whatever you're touching, if it came from the outside, wash your hands after that. Or if you can't wash your hands, use hand sanitizer. But soap and water is just fine. Do that, and always do that before you touch your face or any place that could be sensitive to getting the virus, which is basically the eyes, the nose, the mouth.
And when you say wash down the surfaces, do you mean like the outside of a cardboard box that you got from some delivery company?
I don't think that's usually necessary. We don't have much evidence that suggests that there's a lot of viral transmission that way. So, you know, people who may feel particularly concerned about this, it may make them feel more comfortable to do that. But I think in most cases, it really isn't necessary. I think it's just important that you keep your hands clean after you've opened that box, so you don't, if there is anything there, and the chances are that probably there isn't, if there is anything there that you could accidentally touch and then infect yourself with, you've washed your hands and now you haven't transferred it to the content. And then throw that box away, of course.
How about the worker side of that equation? How best to protect themselves from items that they're handling that could have the virus on them, and how best to protect themselves from the customers they're delivering to at their doors?
Yeah, I think the second is probably the greater risk. And, of course, while they're out there delivering things, right now the streets are pretty empty, but, you know, they could easily come in contact with others, other people they work with or other people on the street who could also be carrying the infection. So the workers do need to be careful. For one thing, they should avoid face-to-face contact, as should we. I know a lot of apartment buildings now are insisting that the deliveries be left downstairs, And that may make it a little easier for the delivery person because they're not seeing a lot of different customers. On the other hand, for the people who are coming down, the residents and so on, they obviously have to be careful to avoid sources of infection. But for the delivery person, obviously, there are a lot of risks. And so they should be careful, not just of the cardboard boxes, but especially of face-to-face contact. The 6 feet social distancing is a good idea and generally is really enough to prevent anyone from getting infected. And they should wear gloves and wash their hands frequently when they're delivering things, just to be on the safe side.
Let's take a call from a grocery delivery person calling in. Vincent in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Vincent.
Hey there, Brian. Love your show.
Thank you.
So I deliver groceries for a company in the Upper West Side, a popular grocery chain up there. And while it's true that we do wear gloves and some of us wear masks, some buildings don't allow us upstairs inside, and that's fine. But then there are the brownstone buildings, like the walk-ups. We do have to go upstairs. But we practice contactless delivery. So we leave the packages at the door, we knock, and we leave. And the customers have been very appreciative, especially the elderly that can't get out to go to the grocery stores or supermarket at 7 o'clock in the morning. They'll take a delivery at whatever time. They're appreciative about it. And, you know, we keep moving. I mean, we've been going through the rain, through warm weather, cold weather, and you know, we're out there, and it's a great service that we're providing.
You're among the heroes. What are you doing about tips, Vincent? Because a lot of times people will order something maybe with a credit card over the phone, but tip the deliverer in person, and probably neither party wants that to happen exactly now.
Well, like I said, with the big A company that I'm working with, we do not take monetary tips. Tips come on the apps, and then we'll see later on our paycheck.
I see.
But you know what? To me, it's greater that I get so appreciated by the customers that see us at their door, and they say, hey, thanks very much for coming out in this pouring cold rain to bring me my groceries. And stay safe. And that's better for me.
And Vincent, stay safe. Thank you so much for your wonderful call. Professor Morris, I know some of this is a matter for labor activism right now. Amazon delivery workers and others are demanding better protection from their employers, which we've talked about here in other segments. The New York Times reported that some delivery workers with UPS and FedEx are continuing to work while ill out of fears of losing their jobs. I don't know if that aspect is in your expertise as a scientist and epidemiologist, but what employers can realistically be expected to do in the shortage situation is a real issue. Do you have any perspective on what they could be doing versus what they're actually doing?
Yeah, we have thought about that a lot because a few years ago, actually in 2006, we developed a pandemic influenza plan for Columbia University. And a lot of those issues came up, actually, even though Columbia is a very good employer, there was still the question of, was there enough sick leave for people to be able to stay home when they were sick? Because that's really essential. And, you know, even so, many of the people who are transmitting the infection are not even aware of being sick. But if someone is sick, they shouldn't be working. It's bad for the other employees, and in the long run, it's really not a good policy for the employer because they'll just have more sick employees. So I think that sick leave and having more generous sick leave policies during this period and paid sick leave really are essential because it does encourage people to do the right thing. And the employers really should be thinking about that. I think one thing about the current situation, as our previous caller indicated, is that a lot of the people who actually keep the world running and keep our city running, we really take for granted to a great degree because their jobs are largely invisible to us, but they are essential. And this hopefully makes us more aware of how important they are in our daily lives and to appreciate them more. So I do think that it is essential to have good employment policies so that people are not working when they're sick, because we know that the greatest danger for many of the workers in places like warehouses, even delivery people, is when they're together with other people in their own warehouse or offices where they could become infected themselves.
Let's go on to shopping in person, Dr. Morris. A friend of mine told me yesterday about shopping at a store on Long Island where they've started to separate the cashiers from shoppers checking out with a barrier of some kind, and you exchange money if you're using cash through an opening. What else would you recommend for structural social distancing in stores?
You know, that is always difficult because especially in New York City where the aisles are so close together and the cashiers are often and the clerks are so close together and so close to the customers. But certainly the precautions we've been recommending for everyone to take make sense. I think it's a very interesting idea to have barriers or other things, and I think we're accepting some degree of social distancing that before would have seemed very impersonal. The previous caller, for example, spoke about contactless delivery, which I think is a very good idea, and we've learned to accept that. So I think that, in general, cashiers should be careful. If you can put some sort of barrier that prevents coughing, sneezing, other things like that, I think that's also very helpful. I think cashiers should be aware of, very often they can't control who's around them, unfortunately, but they should be aware of the situation and try to protect themselves to the extent possible. I think also, unfortunately, we see a lot of cashiers now being replaced by machines, these various automated checkout devices and so on. But those touch screens also need to be cleaned from time to time. We sometimes forget that, but they can also obviously be sources of infection as much as a box, maybe not as much as being breathed on or coughing on someone, but still, you know, we have to consider even the non-human is a possibility for getting infected if we don't keep those clean. For the cashiers, I think it's a very interesting idea. Are there other ways we can do this in a place like New York City? I think in the taxi cabs we used to have these barriers. Mm-hmm. And so if you can put up some sort of protection, I think that's good. The question comes up, what about those cashiers and those clerks who need to come in contact with people in order to help them find things and so on? So I think there they really should just be as careful as they possibly can and take all those precautions we've talked about.
Does the virus live on cash?
We don't know. I know that when people came back from China, there was a lot of cash confiscated. In theory, it could live on any, or it could not live, but manage to survive on any inanimate surface. The question is, how frequently do people get infected through that route? We really don't know, but we probably, I suspect it's probably a secondary route of infection. So I think it's possible, but probably not very, very high probability.
Bob in Union, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Brian. I've got some very bad news for all your listeners.
Go ahead.
I work in the auto parts business.
Uh-huh.
We're considered essential, so we can stay open. I'm a delivery driver. I travel all over Northeast New Jersey every day. And I can tell you that people in the auto parts business are not taking this seriously. I was in a warehouse the other day. There was this woman in there who was really sick. She was coughing and sneezing. She wasn't covering her mouth. And then she wiped her mouth and nose with her bare hand and wiped her hand on her shirt. And then she took her auto parts and she went on her merry way.
What's the employer doing in a situation like that?
Nothing.
Bob, thank you for that dismaying report. Of course, I don't want to tar any whole industry with a bad practice based on an anecdote, even if it's true. But Professor Morris, it is a warning that we don't know what people are doing along the supply chain there.
It is a warning, and we really do need to make sure that people are getting educated and understand that these are very simple precautions that can make a real difference. And these are the same precautions we recommend for people during the flu season, before we have a vaccine, and even afterwards. So these are precautions that people should be taking all the time, washing your hands, covering your coughs and sneezes, and then being sure to wash your hands after that. Staying home when you're sick, trying to maintain a distance, especially if you think someone is coughing or sneezing, of that 6 feet, which we think allows some safety margin. Those are all very good habits that we should be practicing all the time. They would help us with other infections as well. So I think there's still a job to educate. And as you point out, employers can do a lot to help educate their employees, because the supervisors, the employers are obviously watching their employees, and it's a good opportunity for a teachable moment there.
Few people have asked me, and this pertains to shopping as well as other situations, with the 6 feet rule, if you live in an apartment building and just pass someone in your hallway, say, and they didn't just cough or sneeze before you pass by, are you at risk? And same question for in a store or outside on the street, for that matter, if you pass within, say, 2 or 3 feet of someone rather than 6, is the answer known?
Yeah, we don't have really good data on that, but the risk obviously is going to increase, first of all, if someone has the infection. Secondly, with the amount of time you may be near them, and if they're coughing or sneezing in your direction or are infected and you're close, then you have obviously a much better chance of getting infected. So people who are just walking by or running by, the chances are, if they're not sneezing or coughing at that moment, you know, that you have a very low likelihood of getting infected. So any of those very short encounters, there are always going to be exceptions. Nothing is ever completely without risk. But probably for most people, it's going to be a very low risk. People ask about runners, you know, if you're out on the street and a runner comes by or you're running, that too is generally a very low risk. So be careful if you can. But of course, these very short encounters are not likely to be very major sources of spread.
Because if somebody's just breathing rather than really projecting with a sneeze or a cough, even if they've got the virus, it's not likely to reach you?
Well, it could, but a very short encounter, there's a very good chance you won't have enough time to, you know, the virus just won't have a chance to get to you.
You know, Italy, part of Italy, just stopped even jogging long distances and bike riding as a risk of transmission. Did you see that, and what do you think of it?
Well, Italy actually did a very interesting thing. There were some parts of Italy, this is perhaps a little off the subject, but I think it's important. There are some parts of Italy that actually did a lot of testing and isolated people who tested positive, and they did much better than places that were just basically waiting to find cases and then isolating or doing social distancing, which is necessary if you can't test widely, if you can't get to it early enough. So we've really sort of missed that period. We're beyond that window. But we don't really know at this point. This is really unknown territory for us. So people obviously are going to err on the side of caution. I don't know. We may know after their experiences whether this was good in preventing more transmission or not. I suspect probably it's not going to have a major effect, but it might be demonstrating something to remind people to be cautious. And sometimes it's a symbolic gesture as well. But if we had the capacity to test people early on and then just isolate them, which is a more traditional public health approach, I think we would not be finding ourselves in the situation of having to catch up, much as China and Italy and other countries are doing now.
But here we are. Question from a listener via Twitter. What about food takeout and delivery? I worry about the food being infected, the person writes. And obviously restaurants are closed for eating in, but delivery is still happening of prepared food.
we don't necessarily have good data on that, but I think, knowing what we do about the virus, that if you get a salad and someone just, you know, sneezes on it who's infected at that moment, actually, probably the likelihood is, if you get a salad and someone's mishandling it, there are many other foodborne diseases that are far more prevalent and far more likely. So I think, in general, the chances of getting this from cooked food, for example, even if someone who is infected is handling it, would generally be very small. I wouldn't be concerned about that with all the other opportunities to get infected.
Even with something like salad as opposed to cooked food?
Well, we do tend to wash our salads, and for good reason, because there are so many other foodborne infections that are on lettuce, and they've been very well known. So if they're being properly handled in the first place, there really shouldn't be any danger. All the other foodborne infections are, I think, a greater danger. And if you're eliminating those by proper food handling, then I think there isn't really any concern about this one either.
Off topic from shopping for a minute, because I've been getting this question from a number of folks. For people with fever, there seemed to be some disagreement among experts recently about whether ibuprofen products like Advil are as safe to take as acetaminophen products like Tylenol, or if ibuprofen poses some kind of risk. Have you seen enough to have an opinion?
Yes, this was originally suggested by the French health minister, and it seems to be based largely on theoretical consideration. So we don't have any actual clinical data suggesting that. We looked for that and tried to find it. But there's a theoretical notion that maybe suppressing or reducing the immune or the inflammatory response early on might reduce the immune response to the virus. Later on, of course, the inflammatory reaction becomes a very serious problem. So it may be all in the timing. But I think it's really based on theory. A lot of physicians in Italy, for example, were taking that advice simply out of what we now call an abundance of caution.
Right.
But there's no strong evidence for that. So if Tylenol works or acetaminophen works, then I think that that's fine. We don't have strong evidence to suggest that these other drugs like ibuprofen are any more dangerous.
I see. And ibuprofen is an anti-inflammatory, but Tylenol works on another mechanism. Is that the point?
The ibuprofen is a much more potent anti-inflammatory agent than, say, Tylenol.
We have one more minute, and there are so many workers deemed essential, from the auto parts guy who called in to the delivery workers guy who called in, and police and sanitation workers, and, you know, everybody, healthcare workers, obviously, a whole list of others who've been essentially drafted into this war with real risks to their lives. Just a delivery guy one day, frontline hero the next, you know. Do you think about the ethics of any of this from a public health standpoint?
Yeah, indeed. I think that, you know, we hopefully will begin to appreciate each other and our interdependence much more. And obviously, you know, the fact is that in our current world, we can see how quickly an infection can spread and how important it is for us to catch it early and be good to each other, you know, be kind to each other. I think a fundamental message of public health is equity. And not everybody has equal access to health-promoting behaviors, to being able to live in a healthy way, and to have the kind of care they need. And I think that's obviously a gap in society that needs at some point to be improved and corrected.
Dr. Stephen Morris, epidemiology professor at the Columbia University Medical Center and director of their Infectious Disease Epidemiology Certificate Program. You've been so helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and thank you for all the excellent information you're giving us all
in this
difficult time.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.